It's time to hear from the Green Party with co-leader James Shaw.
No.
Gutted.
Chloe Swarbrick.
I don't know if that's the next best thing.
What?
It's there was you know, one of eight Green Party MPs, one who's outside of government, non-ministerial, so I hold a few portfolios, including broadcasting, so it aligns somewhat.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I do.
Well, I mean, a few weeks ago you alluded to becoming the co-leader, didn't you?
No, that was an unintentional. I was just saying, what did I say? It was something about James, and I was like, not, no.
Hopefully?
I definitely did not say one day. Yeah, it was not good, though. Didn't sound great. So thanks for not taking that out of context. Appreciate it.
Yeah, so our first topic, the Land Information Minister Eugenie Sage, one of the three Green ministers, announced the decision on Tuesday to allow a Chinese water bottling giant to purchase land in order to expand their existing Otariki Springs water bottling plant near Whakatane. There's been quite a bit of backlash from members of the party, with some even threatening to quit. So what's your opinion on the matter?
It sucks. Yeah, it's not a good state of affairs. So, yeah, to kind of outline it for the listeners, the folks out there at home, basically the situation was such that this was a decision that Eugenie had to make as a Minister for Land Information, as you just stated. It wasn't a decision that came back to the Green Party caucus. It wasn't a decision even actually, as can be fleshed out theoretically, by the government as a whole. So as Land Information Minister, Eugenie had to make a decision under the Overseas Investment Act 2005, and under the Overseas Investment Act 2005, she essentially had to take into account only the economic benefits, and that's the purpose of the Overseas Investment Act 2005. It provides the ambit, or the framework, within which the Land Information Minister can make these decisions around consents. So the Otakiri plant currently actually already exists, so this isn't a new plant, it's an expansion of it. And the advice that she received from officials inside the ministries was such that this would provide economic benefit. I really want to make it clear that she could not take into account Te Tiriti o Waitangi, nor could she take into account the environment, which is kind of incredibly backwards in why we think that the legislation is ridiculously flawed and obviously subscribes to a really not-fit-for-purpose economic model. But, yeah, in taking all of that stuff into account and in receiving that advice from from ministerial officials, her hands were essentially tied, and she had to make the decision to approve it, or with all of that paper trail and all of that evidence that it would provide economic benefit, open up the country to a really expensive lawsuit. So that's essentially the situation that as it unfolded. As you've noted, Green Party members were unhappy with it. Yeah, there is a really important discussion to be had here about the fact that these are not the kinds of decisions that we want to be seeing made under this new government, under any government actually, which prompts the need to change that Overseas Investment Act 2005, which is now absolutely a major focus for us, so that no decision like this ever need be made again, because it doesn't sit comfortably with us, it doesn't sit comfortably with our membership. So we're facilitating conversations internally to ensure that people are aware of the intricacies and the nuance of the situation, and we are continuing to fight for that systemic change.
So basically Eugenie's hands were just tied by the law in this matter and had to make the decision.
Yeah, but the best kind of analogy that I've come up with to try and explain it is, like, we're in this situation, right, where obviously we are now one of three parties who are kind of, well, we're inside or outside of government, depending on how you want to characterise the confidence and supply agreement. But we essentially kind of have to follow the rules in order to change the system, because if you burn the system down in the process of remodeling it, then what have you got left? What's the precedent? What's the framework within which you're operating? What's the certainty that you're providing for citizens? So we are moving towards that systemic change. Absolutely, it's something that we're 110% committed to, but in the meantime we have to follow the law like anybody. But yeah, that's kind of the situation. It sucks.
So in terms of law change, though, are we seeing progress into that?
Into the Overseas Investment Act 2005 amendments. Yeah. So on that point, it's outside the ambit of stuff that I could possibly know about. So that'll be going through, to kind of flesh it out a little bit, things like cabinet papers, which are only exposed to people within their portfolio areas. So they're highly confidential whilst they're being worked out. So, yeah, they'll be being negotiated, but it's yeah, outside the ambit of stuff which I'm privy to.
We'll just have to wait and see then.
I don't like that as a closing point. I just like to make that, like, the reason that we actually front-footed this and the reason that Eugenia went out and said this, that this had happened, as opposed to not saying anything about it and burying it inside of papers, which later had to be elicited by the likes of an Official Information Act request, is because we want to be transparent about this kind of stuff and about the realities of the situation that we're facing, and we want to be held accountable to it because we do want to be delivering on the screen change which we have promised and campaigned on for so long. But I also just want to really dig into, if I may, just like finally to highlight it for those people who are like having a go at Eugenia on social media, just put this decision in the context of the life of a woman who has spent the last 30 years campaigning for the environment and for conservation. Like, this was this is not a decision that made her happy by any means.
We've had a text in, someone says, why not just slap a big tax on water exports so it's not economical?
There's a few things that we're working on which I can't quite. Yeah, this person might also like the Tauonga levy, which was announced, I think it was on Friday, just last week, which we'll see. We've opened up a discussion on it, but it's something which the Greens have campaigned on for nigh on a decade, to introduce a tax on tourists. It's something which we've seen work really well in other jurisdictions and will be funneled into Department of conservation funding.
Do you think it's more problematic that the water is being bottled and sold, or that it's done by an overseas company?
Wow, that opens a whole can of worms. I mean, are you talking about xenophobia versus the environment?
Well, not necessarily xenophobia, but there's the sentiment that people want the profits to stay in the
country. Yeah, I do think that there's a massive issue and that we currently operate under an economic paradigm where we privatise costs and socialise profit, and it's abundantly apparent in examples like the big building development which is happening in the North Shore at the moment. I can't remember where exactly in particular. I think it's in the East Coast Bays. But where we are seeing a lot of investment in terms of building, and someone is going to profit off of those buildings being sold off. But we're seeing a whole bunch of, silt and environmental degradation happening. It's akin to, a plant which is producing XYZ goods or services, which is just pumping out its pollution into the local river, and it's not copping the cost for, putting all of that pollution into the local river. So in that sense, we very much currently still have a paradigm which privatises profit and socialises cost, and that's super, super backwards. And that's why we're committed to the changes that we'll see from the next budget as of next year, which will be informed by the Wellbeing Index, which James, as Minister for Statistics and Associate Minister for Finance, is working on, which will move us away from this myopic focus on GDP as a measure of success for a country towards something which measures environmental outcomes, employment, the status of housing, the status of education, the status of the healthcare system, and a plethora of other measures which are still yet to be discerned.
What economists often call externalities.
Yeah.
Don't worry about those.
Yeah, you're bang on that one.
Oh, we got another text. We are a soft touch and have sold out to the Chinese. Just a continuation of Key's sellout, John Key. We need progressive radical politicians, not the same old, same old.
Yeah, cheers, Richard. I would just say, I'm really hesitant with the framing there around how we've sold out to the Chinese. Just if you play that back in your head, that's the kind of stuff which informs some quite racist sentiment in our country. So, we can reframe that and say, well, we are selling off our pure fresh water overseas. Can in turn actually lead into quite a nationalist sentiment, which has its own raft of problems attached to it. But essentially the situation that we've landed ourselves in is, yes, absolutely, we're operating under an unsustainable economic paradigm, which is selling off our environmental, the 100% pure image, if we're solely to focus on that. So, we do need to change, and we do need to ensure that we are pulling the environment and conservation into the frame when decisions are being made, which is why, to bring it back to your initial point around the decision that had to be made under the Overseas Investment Act 2005, why we're working towards that amendment.
So let's move on to our other topic. So Green co-leader Marama Davidson recently talked about systemic racism in the New Zealand police force when she was on the AM show. That's the one.
Is that this
Ghana,
past weekend? Was it?
It was.
It all started with a tweet, actually, funnily enough.
It does.
It's been funny. I've been the centre, the eye of the storm on quite a few media stories that have expanded off the back of a tweet. But yeah, Marama basically tweeted something about hashtag driving while brown, sharing a personal story about her brother, who is obviously a Māori man, which evidently ruffled some feathers because it ended up as a media story. To that point, we have, in the chronology of events in terms of New Zealand coming to terms with systemic racism or otherwise, the police commissioner in 2015 noted that the police actually had an issue with unconscious bias. So this is something which was highlighted well before. And I'm pretty certain that the police commissioner has now offered to meet with Marama. You'd probably be best suited to talk to Marama about this because I'm not, in the nitty-gritty of her calendar or agenda and knowing when that's happening. But I would just say that this is a conversation which has kicked off the back of that tweet, which, as I kind of alluded to, evidently ruffled some feathers because people are not comfortable with us saying those kinds of things about our country and, I would say, actually confronting the realities of the situation. But it's quite akin to Taika Waititi's claims that our country is quite racist and the blowback from those kinds of comments. So I would just say that why are we so uncomfortable to see ourselves clearly? Why are we so uncomfortable to have conversations about where we could improve? Why do we want to shut down dialogue? And I find it quite ironic that the people who are, yelling at her to shut this conversation down are the same kinds of people who probably yell from the rooftops that they deserve freedom of speech.
Right.
I mean,
speechless.
Yeah, you got anything right this time? Yeah.
So on to your election access fund bill.
Another now. Woo.
How's
yes.
that going?
Mate, it's so good. I'm so excited. Sorry, I probably just blew some speakers on people's radios. It's so bloody good. I'm so happy about this. This is like such a pure, earnest, wholesome piece of legislation, which is just going to make democracy so much better. It was originally drafted by Mojo Mathers, who was obviously first disabled member of parliament, profoundly deaf, and fantastic Green Party MP, who prior to the last election drafted this legislation. And when we had our first caucus of the 52nd parliament, she came in, as did all of our previous MPs, and just let everyone know that she'd been working on it and said if anyone wanted to take it, they could take it. Me being the massive nerd that I am was like, yes, anything that increases democracy is totally in my ballpark. I will absolutely take that on and fight for it. So the Election Access Fund Bill, in a nutshell, basically provides a fund which is facilitated by the Electoral Commission to increase access to candidates and voters with disabilities to participate in general elections. We got it through unanimously, its first reading, which was it was actually quite a bit of work behind the scenes, and involved talking to spokespeople in both the disability space and the electoral reform space from all parties, but every party in Parliament voted for it, which is rad, and we want to continue that because I think it's really critical that we have that unanimous support to demonstrate to the disabled community that we represent them and we want them to be represented inside of Parliament. So it is now, having passed its first reading at the Select Committee stage, we've just opened Select Committee submissions. I'm not sure if anybody has ever been through the process of submitting to a Select Committee, but low-key arduous process. Essentially, you end up writing... We've made it better over the past few years, particularly with Parliament's website. You're now able to submit online. So I would encourage everybody who is keen to submit and help make the legislation better, because as many people who do submit to it, the more people, the better it is going to be, because it will be more and more reflective of life experience and all the rest. But another fun fact is if they get many submissions from around the country, the Select Committee will be able to travel. My fantastic right-hand man, Tim, who's my EA, Holly, who works in our office, and Etta Bollinger, all met with the Office of the Clerk about 2 weeks ago to confirm that we would be able to have the resources to ensure that this was the most inclusive and accessible Select Committee process ever. So it looks like things like New Zealand Sign Language interpreters, but also producing easy read format documents to explain to people how the Select Committee process actually works and how they themselves can submit in writing and then in front of the committee. But also something which is perhaps a little bit convoluted, that we have confirmed that there will be an expert on hand
at the Governance and Administration Select Committee and disability issues to advise. One of those points of advice will be around the questions that MPs are asking. So I'm not, again, not sure if anyone has ever been around the table at a select committee, but you will often find that the questions that MPs ask are quite complex, and I would hesitate to say they sometimes don't quite know what they're asking.
Big
so,
words, though.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, if you throw enough of that obfuscation in. Another role of this expert on hand will be to simplify those questions and to actually get to the cut and thrust of the point. And this is like kind of perfectly emblematic of the fact that when you design a system for people who face barriers that others don't, for example, those with intellectual disabilities, you end up making the system actually better for everybody. Because wouldn't it be really cool if we just had straightforward questions from MPs at select committee, right? It's not just for people with intellectual disabilities or otherwise, it's for everybody. It makes it more straightforward.
So how does one currently actually submit to a select committee?
So you can go onto Parliament's website. If you just Google straight up, I think, Election Access Fund Bill, it will land you on the Parliament's website on legislation, and it'll say that it's a select committee. And if you just click through to the select committee little bit, you can then scroll down and it'll just say submit. And it's pretty straightforward. We've also ensured that the question prompts are easily understandable, which is really cool. People just need to go through, fill out some boxes, and I would highly recommend those who are keen on sharing their personal story to tick the box that they would like to appear in front of the select committee. It can be a little bit low-key intimidating, but it will be made all the better by ensuring that MPs are actually asking questions that make sense.
Brilliant.
Not just throwing the dictionary at you.
Which is so rife in the social sciences.
Yeah, it's true. But yeah, it's sick. It's basically going to be the most accessible and inclusive select committee process legit ever. So it's something for New Zealanders to all be proud of.
So one last question. Paul says the previous government's loved chucking stuff through under urgency. Mm. Why not do the same for the bottling issue? Not enough support in the coalition?
I can't comment on that because I just don't know enough, and I wouldn't seek to wade into something where, like, just straight up, like, 110%. I just don't know. I don't know. It's well above the kind of amount of stuff that I could possibly know in terms of it's not within my portfolio areas. I don't have ministerial kind of warrant to know that kind of stuff either. So yeah, you'd have to ask the minister.
Leave it till when you're co-leader.
we can park that one. I don't know how long I'm going to be a politician. I have said previously that I quite happily blow up my job if it was a catalyst or something that I genuinely believed in. And I think that I'm finding that that is sensible drug law reform. So we'll wait and see.
Yeah. So like hanging out with Ross Bell.
Is that what you do when you leave Parliament? Everyone just goes and hangs out with Ross. It sounds fun.
Exactly. Thank you so much for being on the show, Chloe.
Cheers, man. Thanks for having me.
That was James Shaw for the Green Party.
Nope.
Something like that.